Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for a conversation about women in the law. I am Shelley Saxer, Professor of Law at Pepperdine University School of Law. We are joined today by Judge Dorothy Nelson of the Ninth Circuit, Judge Rosemary Barquette of the 11th Circuit, and Judge Carolyn Deneen King of the 5th Circuit. These judges have been invited by our esteemed new dean, Danelle Reese-Taha, formerly Chief Judge of the 10th Circuit, to join her for a panel discussion titled Hearing Her Story. We appreciate so much having you here with us today. Judge King, I would like to ask you, what do you think has been the biggest impact for you in your professional career going through several years?
Biggest impact. I think I've seen myself as a beneficiary of the Civil Rights Act. I began practicing law in 1962, and the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964. And I don't believe that I would be here today. I certainly wouldn't have the accomplishments that I have had if it hadn't been for the Civil Rights Act. So, and my career, beginning with a series of reversals and then finally winding up with a series of, I guess, what one would call victories, really tells the story of where the Civil Rights Act began and where it has progressed to this point, which is terrific. I mean, and this is a period of 50 years during which this has happened, and it's been a marvelous achievement for this country and it helped me enormously.
Thank you. I'd like to come back to you in a moment and ask for maybe an example, one example, if you can think of something that happened and relate that to the Civil Rights Act. And Judge Nelson, thank you so much for being with
us.
It's
a great pleasure to be here for you and talk about.
And you bring a unique experience here in having been a woman dean and then a woman judge on the Ninth Circuit. And it would be great to hear from you as to how your experience in life, how you manage this professional and your personal life in both of those capacities.
I would just have to say, having the right husband. I remember when I was in China in 1989 and doing work with the Supreme People's Court, and I said to our translator, I want to meet with women lawyers. Why do you want to meet with women, he said. Your number one visit, their number three visit. And I said, I'm a woman, Mr. Sun. Is the judge coming? My husband was a Superior Court judge. Yes. Well, we went, and I talked about men and women by being the two wings of a bird, Chinese talk. The one is male, the other is female. Unless they're both strong, the bird cannot fly. Mr. Sun translated very slowly, and my husband said, may I say something? Until women achieve full equality, men can't be the best of what they can be. Well, he translated that very slowly. Ran down the hall, brought him back a big present. And as we left, the Chinese women patted my husband, uncharacteristic, saying something like, Mo Fong Zhang Fu. I said, what are they saying, Mr. Sun? Model husband, model husband. So my model husband, when I was dean, I was very lucky. I didn't work as a litigator. I did do, when I taught wills and trusts, I did a lot of work for faculty at USC. But I was the first woman on the faculty, and I felt totally accepted. But it was the wives that had a problem with me. Why was I there? So women wouldn't approve this today, but I had each of them to dinner to see my husband, my model husband, my children, and we became good friends. And I found that led, since I was the only woman there, when I became woman dean, an older faculty member said to me, Dorothy, come 15 minutes late to faculty meeting, show them who's boss. Instead, I went home and baked 5 dozen chocolates and cookies, announced there would be food at the meetings, and they came on time. And so working it through, trying to be myself and not trying to be what they were, they did certain things to get ahead in life. I had my own style. But I found that as dean, I was very interested in dispute resolution, mediation. I'm a member of the Baha'i Faith. We consult on everything in 182 countries. But I would go to other countries, China or India. They clapped very nicely, say, do come back. When I became a federal judge, it was, thank you, judge. How do we do it? How do we start? So I found that that was a huge change for me. And although I found becoming a judge was isolating at the beginning. We established a justice center next to our courthouse to promote peaceful resolution of conflict with children in the courts and in the community. As a federal judge, I felt far more powerful than as a dean. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Yes. Thank you so much. And Judge Barquette, let me ask you a question about your experience in law school and how you found that experience to be as a woman.
I went to law school a little bit later. When I graduated from high school, I entered a religious order because I thought I had a calling to do that, and I was there for about 8 years. And after I left and taught school for a year and then decided to go to law school, so I was about 27 or 28 years old. So I came with two or three different things, which I'll make reference to in a second. But the law school at the University of Florida was, of course, primarily male. This was in 1968, and they made it very clear that they were going to try to embarrass the women students there. They used to have a custom called shuffling, where if a woman entered the library, the men or the boys would shuffle their feet on the wooden floor, and so you'd hear this thunderous kind of noise as you were in. And the same thing would happen in class. If you were called upon in class, if a woman was called upon or if a woman volunteered an answer, she would be shuffled in class. And I certainly was aware of it, but I don't know that it had the desired effect on me, I guess, is what I would say. And I think that's because when you're in a religious order, everyone is extremely deferential, and even whether this was a Catholic religious order, but whether you're Catholics or you're not, people treat you with respect, and at least they did in those days. I don't know about today, but and so you develop this sort of attitude that expects people to be kind and nice to you, and I think in that way, I think that was part of my reaction to things. I think a lot of what maybe would have been intended to be unkind kind of just totally went over my head. And then once you generate that attitude of expectation of being treated fairly, it sort of sometimes happens, not all the time. That was kind of my experience in law school. Otherwise, I found it difficult because I had had a whole liberal arts education and knew nothing about the ordinary business world. The concepts of torts or property law were so alien, but you, again, you work hard and you adapt to it. Now they no longer shuffle, and it is such an ancient custom that when I went back to the University of Florida to talk to the law review and made mention of shuffling, I got this blank looks from everybody, like, what are you talking about? And when I explained it, they were, like, properly horrified about the practice.
Well, thank you. Before I ask Dean Judge Taha to finish this, I'd like to come back to Judge King and ask you maybe for an example.
First job interview that I had was with the United States Attorney in Houston. I came with a letter from the Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Tax Division, whom I had worked for preceding summer, saying, this woman is fine, you should hire her. He took me to a stand-up coffee spot I never made it into his office. And when we finally got back to his reception area, he put his Stetson up on the hat tree and said, don't get me wrong, ma'am, I've hired me a black and I've hired me a Mexican, but I ain't up to hiring me a woman yet. And the amazing thing, and by the way, if you are wondering whether he used racial epithets, the answer is he did. But the amazing thing about the man is that he was a bleeding heart liberal, and he had hired the first black assistant United States attorney and the first Mexican one in the country. But such was the prospect of hiring a woman in 1962 as a lawyer that he wouldn't even think of it. And the second interview I had was at Fulbright and Jaworski with Leon Jaworski, who offered me a job doing collection work at half the pay of the men. Now, this was all in 1962. These interviews were only separated by a week. So that's the example of the kind of thing the Civil Rights Act was designed to address. In 1979, the chair of the Merit Screening Panel for President Carter came to me and said, would you have any interest in being a federal judge? And I said, no, why would I want to do that? I was a transactions lawyer. You know, we didn't ever get near a courthouse. And if you did, it was a sign of trouble. So I said, no, I don't want to do that. Why would I do that? And he said, because President Carter wants to appoint a woman from the Fifth Circuit, and we have searched high and low, and you're the only one we can find that's qualified. Of course, I'd never been in a courtroom. How I could be deemed qualified? You know, that's the legacy of all those years. So all of a sudden, in the course of the period from 1964, when the Civil Rights Act was passed, to 1979, we went from no opportunities for women to it suddenly being an asset instead of a liability, and to enormous doors that were suddenly open to women. And that's the history. My career has very neatly fit within that time frame. And then, of course, I went on and became the chief judge of my circuit and a member of the Judicial Conference and chair of the Executive Committee. So I've wound up from not being able to get a job at all to being offered a job at half pay to do collection work, to being asked to be a federal judge, to winding up as the chair of the Executive Committee of the Judicial Conference. That is what the Civil Rights Act did for me. And that's what my fellow citizens in this country did for me.
Thank you, Judge, for sharing. Thank you. Before we get down there, I will thank you. I chose this instead of an inaugural lecture or any of that kind of stuff because we have deep-sixed these stories for so long.
Yeah.
And, you know, even our friends, the Blacks and the Hispanics, have sort of told their stories. So I decided these women students needed to hear our story.